204 DGS. We have Ricky Horton joining us at 2:30. My buddy Jeff Faulkner is going to be here to play some music for us at 3. Has the ELO tribute coming up. Stairway to Kevin. We have the Think Tank with Steve Elman and Jeff Smith. So long way to go here on the show. And it's time for Razor's Edge.
It absolutely is. Have you guys heard about this airline in India that made the decision to let female passengers opt out of sitting next to men on their flights?
No.
So it's called IndiGo, and this is India's largest low-cost airline, so largest budget airline, announced the change for all of its flights starting this month. Women, whenever they log on to, you know, like you do early bird check-in or something for Southwest and you pick your seat, or not Southwest, but you can pick your seat on certain airlines, women can now see the gender of other passengers who have already selected seats, with women marked in pink during online check-in to help them decide where to sit. Men are not shown this information and can only see available seats.
Doesn't seem quite fair.
That's what a lot of people on social media are saying, saying things like that's discrimination. Men should be offered the same choice. Why can't men choose not to sit next to women? And
or then would men just use it to sit next to women?
That's some people's thinking. I know that it's in an effort to cut back on like unwanted touching, sexual assault, things like that, that they've had to make these steps. But it does sound, I talked about this on my show a little bit a couple weeks ago because the story came out a while back and it's kind of circling back around again. I feel like you can't say that it's not. I mean, you're literally discriminating against men and offering something to women that men aren't getting. I get why they're giving that choice to cut back on sexual assault. But at the same time, like the fact that women are privy to some information that men aren't privy to, that feels kind of weird to me.
I agree with all of that. And I'll ask this as a question. Does the current state of things in the country of India justify that difference? Because they have had massive problems.
Yes, they have.
Gang rapes, sexual assaults, men raping women, and there's just no penalty for. Oh yeah, it's been a pretty big news story. How long?
Couple years now.
Yeah, at least a few years. This has been a pretty big deal, and I think it started getting some attention not long ago because it happened to a tourist. Mm. And when it's happening in some of these smaller towns, people just, they don't do anything about it. And the men are off the hook because, and I don't know if it's a religious thing or if it's a cultural thing, but does that change how we feel about it? Because we can say, yes, it is discriminatory because it is on its face, right? But what if it's intended to be because of this?
Yeah, I mean, discrimination is obviously a loaded bad word.
Right.
But we discriminate all day, every day.
I mean, that's how the mind works, right?
Yeah.
You take information and you're deciding this versus that. But does knowing that, not knowing, but like considering that is a major problem in a gigantic country, by the way, where women do not feel safe, and even when they file a complaint, there it's completely ignored, or even if charges are filed, nothing happens. And this is one area where they can take some control back. It's not necessarily fair. I think we can all agree it's not meant to be fair, though.
Yeah, maybe I'm too soft on this. Maybe I'm too lackadaisical intellectually, but whether it's this or it's some other rule, if it helps someone and doesn't hurt me, but discriminates against me? Okay.
Yeah.
As an example, how would a man be harmed by not knowing that you're sitting next to a man or a woman?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, I'm open to the argument that there is harm to the men in that I don't see it. I don't see, like, if I'm booking a flight and I'm not worried about it. Now, you could argue maybe that there are men that would prefer not to sit next to women for their own religious beliefs or just because they don't want, whatever. It's kind of like the Mike Pence, don't want to be in a room alone with another woman without your wife present. So I understand that there may be an argument in that. I don't know if it's a big issue in India or not. I just don't know. And they can definitely get into that, and maybe it has to be that way. Maybe you just have to open it up and say, well, everybody gets to have this same choice. But then it opens up men being like, well, now that I know, I'm going to sit next to a lady and it's going to be full and there's no choice.
Wonder how long until it hits the U.S.
I don't know. I do know that in Japan, they have some train cars that are specifically for women. And it's because they have problems with like people taking unwanted photos and stuff, like upskirt photos is a big thing. Yeah, it's actually a law that when you buy a phone there, the camera shutter sound is permanently on. You can't take silent pictures. I mean, obviously you can bring a phone from another country and it's not going to be like that, but I don't know. I find stuff like this to be fascinating because I'm kind of on the side of, I think everyone should be able, if we're going to open it up to like, you can see the gender of the person you're going to sit next to, I think everyone should have that information, but I'm also fine with a woman being like, and I will only sit next to another female. Like maybe there's a female only section or something. I feel like that's a good compromise, but it's the whole like hiding information from half the population that feels a little odd to me.
There's no type of sexual harassment that I am a fan of, but I am just so flabbergasted that someone has the gall to attempt something like that on a plane flying in the sky for hours where everyone can see. It just seems like such a...
Yeah, and I wonder how much it's actually happening on planes or how much...
just a fear of...
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to be around a strange man because this has happened to me in the past and I want to try to avoid that if at all possible.
Yep, could be.
It's just interesting stuff because... We obviously, you know, we live in this age where it's like everyone's equal, everyone's the same. And anytime you try to pretend that we're not the same, like you are a bad person. But obviously that's not, it's not true. Like we all have differences. We all have different things.
Yeah.
I mean, there are obviously differences between men and women. The fact that Indigo even has to do something like this. And I'm not saying that women can't sexually assault or harass men. Like that can happen too. It's just less of a... prevalent thing. Anyway, since we're talking about travel, I know Andrew has stayed in the Airbnb. He stayed in a weird Airbnb with a host residing in the house before. I saw this article on Business Insider. It's the title is "Hosts Have Ruined Airbnb with Excessive Fees, High Demands, and Bad Customer Service," according to travel experts.
I 100% agree with that. I think I've told you guys the story before. A bachelor party that I went to in 2021 for one of my friends, we stayed at this place, and when we walked in, there was this enormous list of all of the things that they were going to charge you for, and it was every instance of a violation we were notified was a flat fee of $200.
Wow.
And it was all stuff like if any of the chairs are out of order or if any of the furniture has been moved in any way and not moved exactly back to the way it was. And of course, you know, if the dishes aren't washed, if the laundry isn't done, if the trash isn't all taken out or whatever.
It sounds like a fun bachelor party.
It became a lot less fun after that because we all spent the whole time freaking out about whether or not the patio chairs were arranged just ever so. And of course, we didn't see the list until after we had already rearranged some of the furniture. Because of course, we were renting the entire place for, you know, 3-4 days. You'd think you'd just have a right to do whatever you want in there. But yeah, it's there's been so much stuff like that, or, you know, I don't want to have to do the laundry for you. You know what I mean? Like, I just paid you $300 to stay, you know, two nights in your apartment or whatever. Can you wash the sheets?
What am I
giving you this money for?
I know the places you stay are really cheap because you're sharing like a couch with somebody.
Yeah.
But like in general, are Airbnbs comparable to hotel rooms much cheaper?
I wouldn't say they're much cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain benefits to getting an Airbnb. You can, like, for example, I've stayed in one once. It was in Kyoto, Japan. It was really cool because it felt like we were living in that city because we were, like, staying in this house. They didn't have a lot of crazy rules where you had to, like, wash the dishes and stuff. You just be respectful and clean up. And there are, you know, you can be in certain locations that maybe a hotel isn't in, or you can have a whole pool to yourself or whatever. They spell it all out for you on the Airbnb commercials and such. But with a hotel, it's just like you can check in, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You have fresh towels and a front
desk.
Kind of a fan. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
You were holding court yesterday about cheapies.
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
Cheapies and Willies in Alton. Shout out to them. I usually end up going to... to Willie's. They're the used tire places in Alton.
He was really regaling Ranji and Amy with this. They had no idea that there were used tire places.
Well, they were complaining about the price of, because I was complaining about the price of batteries because I just had to get a battery for my car on Friday. Yeah. And then I was like, do you have any idea how much batteries have gone? Because in my mind, batteries are $90 and tires are $80. And both of those things have like tripled in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years. And I didn't know that about the tires, especially because I haven't bought a new tire since like 2011.
Yeah.
I go to one of these places and I get used tires and they're spectacular. It's really great. And they're like $30, $35.
Question.
Yes.
And I mean this as a sincere question, not in doubt.
Oh, here we go.
No, I'm just talking like because tires are typically like it's a long term thing. Mm-hmm. So you can have a short term fix, but you're going to need another short term fix in a short term because by definition.
Knock on wood, I have had a tire, a used tire from Willie's on the front right of the front left side of my car since 2017.
Okay.
Nice.
I have had very good luck there. I'm sure I've had one or two, you know. Lemons ever out of the, you know, I've bought.
I mean, used is different. Used, there's levels of used, right? There's a used that has 4,000 miles and there's used that has 27,000 miles.
Yeah, and they show you. What they do is they wheel it out to you, they roll it out.
Show you the tread depth and all that.
What do you think about this? And I don't know what I'm looking at, so whatever they show me, I just go, that looks great.
What are they getting for batteries now?
$250 for batteries.
Yeah, crazy.
But they put it in, you know, they installed it. So it's like, you know, I don't know how to put a battery in.
You know what blows my mind about tires? Whenever you have a hole in your tire and you take it to the tire place and they're like, okay, we'll patch it for you. How does that work? I mean, I know how they do it, but it's just crazy that they're able to mend the hole and it's like, all right, go back out on the interstate. You're good.
Yeah.
It's just very impressive that people are able to work with their hands and get that kind of stuff done.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're all out there watching Oscar.
Yeah.
Oscar from AAA, yeah. Who did a fantastic Advantage Towing, I think, was the company that came out and helped. And he was fantastic, very friendly. Very nice, did a great job. But yeah, he's like, oh, there's like a real tricky little screw here. I'm gonna have to take care of that. And I'm like, ah, screwdriver. And he's like, yeah, probably. Yeah. Classic screwdriver. Gotta take care of that.
221 DGS on KMOX. So Wheels, Tim Walz is embroiled in a dog gate.
Have you guys seen this?
I have not.
It's like the dumbest thing in the world. So there's a picture of him. He's petting his dog, Scout, and then next to it, there's him picturing, he's petting another dog that's not his dog, and apparently it's gone viral. I don't know if it's meant to be funny, but it's coming from a lot of, you know, like, not, I wouldn't even say Republican, but like right-wing, you know, social media accounts that are like, see, he's even lying. That's not his dog that's in that photo. And it's attached to a video of him at a dog park, and his dog is there, and it's just playing with these other dogs, and he's petting another dog. And I guess my bigger question is, why do we do this? Why are we doing, like, that's not his dog? So what?
Not qualified also, to be vice president.
Like, A, why would you lie about, like, why would you think he'd be lying about it being his dog when it doesn't look like his dog? And B, even if he was... So, I mean, but like, do people not get that, you know, when like, I love dogs. If I see dogs somewhere, I'm probably going to pet the dog, whether it's my dog or not.
The answer is as simple as we're living in an aggressively stupid time. We reward people for being aggressively stupid.
Yeah. I'm all for if you want to take policy things and tear them apart or maybe somebody exaggerated.
Those are hard, though.
Yeah. People maybe exaggerated their resumes. Like, fine. Explore all that. Why would it even become a thing where people are like, he's even lying about it? Which dog is his? First of all, he's not. It's just at a dog park. And secondly, even if he did, that's not something you care about.
So you watched Horizon? I'm interested.
Yeah, okay. So you guys know about this, Rachel and Andrew? I think I told Andrew about it.
This is Kevin Costner.
This
right?
is Kevin Costner's opus. So part one is now streaming on Max. That's where we watched it this past weekend. It didn't do well at the theaters, even though it's gotten pretty decent ratings. Like, it's like a 7 on IMDb. It's around that, like 70%, 65, 70% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. It's not getting terrible reviews, but it didn't do well at the theater because it's like 3 hours and 10 minutes long. And he's doing, like, there's another one. They were supposed to do one in July and one in August, and I guess they pushed off the one in August, or maybe they're just going to do it straight to streaming as opposed to theaters for the same reason. But it brought me back to, like, I'm not getting into the plot or anything like that. It's actually not terrible. It's not amazing, but it's not terrible. It's really cool to look at. It's an interesting time in history. But it brought me back to our conversation about the worst time ever, the hardest time ever for raising kids. Mm-hmm. It is not now. It was then. Yeah, I mean, like the visual of people caravanning across the wilderness in wooden carriages drawn by horses with wheels breaking and attacks from Native Americans and people overheating and dying because it's 100 degrees out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, like your kid was like literally facing death everywhere. Rattlesnakes, like, literally everything was death. You get sick, you're probably going to die. So it just struck me, though, how harsh life was watching this, which is kind of the point of the movie, like not outside of the plot. It's kind of the point like, man, times were pretty tough. And thinking about how tough must it have been where you were coming from
to go there,
to be willing to take all of that risk to get somewhere where you may not end like you may not end up getting to stay there because you might get attacked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that was the way the world was. And it struck me in a couple of ways. But put yourself in that headspace when you're looking at how difficult life was. This was right before. So the time period of the movie, this first movie, is right before the Civil War and the lead up to the Civil War. Right. It's not about the Civil War. That's happening separately. But like that's the time period. So we're not that long ago. We're talking about 1860 ish, 160 something years ago. That's how much of a difference there is between then and now, where to get ahead in the world, you had to risk your life and your family's lives to get into a carriage with everything you owned, which could be stolen by bandits. You could be attacked by natives that don't want you on their land. And by the way, different argument there. Maybe you shouldn't have been on their land, but like that's a separate argument. But that's how desperate things were for people in that time, that was your out.
Are refugees and migrants the modern version of that?
I don't know. That's a good, I mean, clearly the motivations would be the same, right? I don't know if it's the exact same
danger.
You know, yeah. I mean, yeah, they have to cross deserts. You have to cross oceans. But yeah, you're probably not facing people that want to kill you. Although, you know, maybe a little bit. But I think the motivations are the same, right? If you're willing to take great risk like that, if you're willing to risk your life to go from where you are to another place, that other place you're leaving must be pretty terrible.
It's like when Lewis and Clark hit the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah.
I would have turned around and been like, nothing there.
Nope. No, can't go to cross those. They're
stop
huge.
In Missouri.
Now, theirs is a little bit different motivation, right? They're explorers. They're just trying to discover new things. But if you're taking, you know, if you're going to bring your family, your three kids, and everything you own and pile into one, you know, one wagon, and you're going to go, I mean, months of dealing with the elements. When it storms, you're in the storm. Right? I mean, when it snows, you're in the snow.
I was watching 1883, which is a prequel to Yellowstone.
Yeah, yeah.
And after three episodes, I had to stop for just that reason. It was so absolutely harsh, and it was filmed very harshly and in a realistic way, and it was just too much.
And it just brought me back to that conversation. Like, yes, there are things today that are harder to deal with mentally, but life was way harder back then.
Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX. Time to talk to our pal, Ricky Horton. Hey, Rick.
How are you?
Let's start with the Dave question, okay?
Yeah, you bet. Fire away.
So when Mark Bolger was the quarterback of the Rams, he and I were hanging out all the time, and he would kind of walk me through the offense or, you know, like this plays a red 19 double XY flip nut hooker kind of thing. And so we all played Sandlot or high school football, but that's a totally different deal. So what about baseball? We've all played Cory League. Some of us played high school. Is it just a super elevated, talented version of that game? Or is it similar to the NFL where it's like, oh, no. The stuff you have to know is just like complete next level stuff.
Well, I think there's a little bit of both. And it's funny, I remember the days playing football as a kid, not very well, but with my buddies. And, you know, our plays, we would draw them with a stick in the dirt.
Yeah.
So a long way from the stick in the dirt to Mark Bolger had to have in his head. So I think baseball is kind of the same way. You have the simple version that you just go out and here's a bat, here's a ball, let's play and make up the rules and go do it. And then, you know, I think there's a lot of information. I don't think it's complicated information the same way football is in terms of the plays, but I think it's, you know, there's a lot of information about tendencies of a batter. You know, like he doesn't swing at the first pitch very much. He likes the ball in. Cutters away work. but not early in the count, only late in the count. I mean, things like that. It's like your head explodes if you try to remember it all. So I think that's the difference. It's not that it's complicated. It's just there's a lot of it, and you have to figure out what works for you.
You know what's interesting too is you kind of have to flip the roles a little bit though. Like in football, the offense initiates, so
yeah,
the defense is in a more basic position, right? Well, on the baseball side of it, the defensive side really initiates. So it's you're flipping the information, because I would say that there's a lot of difficulty in both of them. But I think Rick, the thought processes, a lot of the pitching stuff is a combo of what you talked about in your pregame meetings,
right,
and then what's working right in the moment, right? You kind of have these two things, which is a lot like a football offense. You know, we have these ideas of how to attack the other team, but what's working in the moment. And as a hitter, you're just on you are always on the defensive because you don't know what's coming, and you have 0.3 seconds to react to what you're seeing. So you because coaching kids, there's not a lot of game planning, right? It's a lot of basic, simple, see the ball. When you see spin, you do this. When it's coming in straight, you do this. And in the upper levels, as you go up, high school's different than youth, and then college is different than high school, and the pros of that, and then the big leagues are different than everything. But it's like a new set of information every pitch, as opposed to just seeing something and doing something.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think just like why do you need exhibition games in football? Why do you need spring training? It's to get the visual part and the reaction part, because it's a lot of reaction. So on a football field, you react. You're planning something. It's interesting. I played basketball in high school, and I was very average, and I should have been better. But I played so mechanically. I was a processor, and I kind of knew where I was supposed to be about 5 seconds after I was supposed to be there. And I just you can't keep processing. You got to just go. And I actually became better when I started playing pickup basketball, you know, at the Missouri Athletic Club downtown. It's like, oh, that's how you play. You just go and do it. And so, I mean, honestly, it was just, I think there's a truth in that when it comes to baseball. When a player's doing well, what do they tell you they're doing? They don't say, well, I've got my hips open. No, they say, I'm seeing the ball.
Yep.
I'm seeing the ball and I'm hitting it. And it gets down to that simplicity. But really, there's reaction in that. There's a little bit of anticipation. But most of all, it's just kind of your response to something that happens, like you say, in less than a half a second.
Yeah, and it's fun too, because every game will be like, so just use Nolan Arenado as an example. One game you might be facing Kyle Hendricks, where he's topping out at 85-86. You actually can go by just look and sight at that velocity. You don't have to guess too much. You can react to what you see. When somebody's throwing 102, you don't have time to react. You have to decide before the pitch, what am I looking for? And if it's there, I'm going. And that's why you see some of these crazy swings on a pitch that's like 1.5 feet off the plate, because the guy had to swing at the fastball, otherwise he wasn't going to hit it, but it was a breaking ball instead.
Yeah, one of the things I like to say is he swung at a pitch that wasn't thrown to him, and that's what I'm saying. It's like he swung at a fastball, but it was a slider, so it's like, how can a big leaguer swing like that? Well, first of all, big leaguer swings like that because, unlike, you know, in the backyard and in high school baseball, the guy's throwing 98 miles an hour, and you've got literally no time to react. Hitting's tough. There's no question. You know, interesting, back to the offense-defensive thing, one of the best pieces of pitching advice I ever got as a minor league pitching coach told me that, even though you'd say the pitcher's on defense, he said, pitching is an offensive position.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the ball, and the more you think about it as offensive, the better off you're going to be, as opposed to letting the other team dictate what you do. I found that to be really kind of liberating and empowering to me as a 23-year-old, and I kept it with me through my career.
Rick, if you're doing this job 10 years from now, what would you guess the upper limits of how hard the guys you're throwing would be?
I think we're getting close to a max. I don't have any real science to judge that on, although I did watch a TV show once that said we were getting to the max. There is such a thing. They said that they basically the physiology of now they could alter that, and who knows what they could do to enhance your physiology. But in terms of ligaments and kind of how your body works, I mean, only throw but so hard without getting hurt. In fact, we're on the edges of that now with all the injuries we have. So I feel like, you know, I don't think we're going to see 10 years from now a guy throwing 110. But, you know, the only way you get to be 110 is if they monkey with the guns again, which they did 20 years ago, to make guys throw harder now than they were then, even though that's not really true. They're different guns they're using. They're measuring it differently. And I think they could do that just to wow people as they did in the 90s and early 2000s to get them to be excited about baseball, to say, hey, that guy's throwing 100 when really he's throwing 96.
Yeah, I was just reading about this last week, Rick. The guys up at Driveline are always working on these ideas, right? And they think that maybe a few more miles an hour is there at the top end of the spectrum now based on how we know the body works and what we can do. But what they're starting to do is starting to use the biometric data that you can collect about how the body moves, combine that with some scientists who study kinetic motion and how you can get things to work in sequence to build up momentum more. And they think that they might be able to find a different way of doing things, maybe using AI down the road. So it probably wouldn't look like it does now, because it seems like we're getting to the peak of what we can do the way that we currently do it.
Yeah, well, I tell you, if the folks at Driveline are running the game of baseball in 10 years, I probably won't be watching it. Because they're honestly screwing up pitching. They need to teach pitching, not velocity. I was just on an MLB call with broadcasters and front office people and MLB personnel. They recognize that we've got a problem in this game and the way the pitching's being taught, and we have to de-emphasize velocity somehow through the rules, and they're contemplating – guys, how to do that. It's really interesting. I mean, it's amazing that it's such a thing in the baseball world at the upper levels that we are making this game less interesting by chasing spin rate and miles per hour. We've got to find a way to legislate that to kind of change it. It's interesting I thought that was kind of just a small view, but apparently it's becoming kind of the majority view right now.
Yeah, and part of the problem too is it works, which is why everybody does it, but it doesn't. But working to have success against hitters is not the same thing as having a better, more entertaining product for your customers.
Well, it works because you have 13 pitchers and six of them in AAA, which you never used to have.
That's right.
And you don't care if pitchers get hurt.
Right.
Pitchers are getting hurt at an alarming rate. Players are not.
Yep.
And they're starting to say, we should care about pitchers in their careers, not just second baseman getting taken out on a double play or catchers at home plate. We've got to start caring about pitchers. And I would say, about time. I mean, I think we're moving in that direction, which is good. And I think fans prefer that. I think you could do things like, okay, a pitcher gets hurt, goes on the injured list. Okay, he's on there for 30 days, not 10 or 15. Or you limit the number of pitchers you can have on your staff to 11 or 12, which they are talking about, and I think that's going to happen at some point.
Yeah, John Mozeliak has mentioned that one way to get starting pitchers to go deeper into games and to decrease this max effort thing would be to have a 10 or 11 man pitching staff, because then you just don't have the bodies to do it. And you know, we can all speak to this, Rick, but I think that baseball misses out when you don't have pitching matchups, when you don't have because they're draws. I mean, people want to go see Shohei Ohtani pitch. They want to go see those stud starters. That sells tickets. You know, a bullpen game doesn't sell tickets in and of itself.
Yeah. And think about this. Think about the number of times where I have made this statement when I'm going over the pitching matchup. Well, here's a guy, David Festa. The Cardinals he's never faced the Cardinals. I feel like I've said that 100 times this year about a guy never facing the Cardinals. So think about all the, you know, there's no kind of familiarity. You know, familiarity breeds brawls, which I kind of like. I mean, how far have we gone from Yadier Molina and Brandon Phillips? I mean, we may need a bit of the rivalry back thing back again, so we can create some of that interest. You know, we need a villain, not a mean villain, but a villain nonetheless.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Have a great call. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
250 DGS. Happy Tuesday. A couple more days of really hot weather, and I'm looking ahead to next week. Holiday weekend looks pretty good, but then next week there are a couple of days, like Wednesday and Thursday, that are a high of 75 and a low of 58. So back to what we had like a week or so ago. Andrew, you were following someone last night with a DGS sticker?
Yeah, I was tracking him. I track him when I find him, you know, so I can tag him, make sure that we keep tabs on him. No, I ended up behind, driving home behind somebody. If you drive a Toyota RAV in Alton and you have a DGS sticker, what's up? Shout out. I was behind you.
I was following you.
And well, it didn't start
all
out
the
as
way
following.
Home.
It didn't start out as following because we were going in the same direction. They live. Turns out they live pretty close to me. So we were going in the same direction. But my wife noticed it and she said, "Hey, that sticker says DGS. That's so funny. It's almost like the show." I was like, "Yeah, it is the show. That's our sticker." Jeez. And then I was like, "I'm gonna follow them. I'm gonna follow them, see where they live." Because I knew it was gonna be close to us.
All right.
That's the part you don't say out loud.
Yeah.
No, I didn't follow them. But they turned into the neighborhood that's adjacent to mine. So I'm assuming that they probably live.
Which side of the gated community?
They're on the outside of the gate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So they're no better than you.
Yeah.
If they were in the gated community, you should have driven by and been like, "You think you're better than me?
You think you're better than me, huh?
I'm on the DGS."
Now, don't get me wrong. Even though they don't live in the gated community, they probably still think they're better than me, and that's fine. I'm sure they are.
You know the reason people put DGS stickers on their car is because we're so cool that we're on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Chimp crazy. I keep trying to show Dave, and he wants to watch it himself as part of the show.
Yeah, last night I was just sitting at home, and I got a message from Agent Dupe. Shout out to Agent Dupe, saying like, "Hey, just so you know, they use a little clip from the DGS on the second episode of Chimp Crazy," and I immediately went and watched that short clip because it is at the very beginning of the episode. If you have HBO or Max and want to check it out, and it was so cool. The only regret I have is I wish I would have watched that episode as soon as it came out, because I watched episode one and really enjoyed it, but I just hadn't watched episode two yet. To stumble over that organically would have been
way better,
but I'm also glad that we knew about it in advance. I mean, it's just really cool that they used a clip from the show.
That's pretty neat.
I also followed Agent Dupe home after he sent Agent Dupe.
Since we're on the monkey theme, you'll laugh at this, and maybe you've seen it. Have you seen the memes about the astronauts stuck?
Really
where we should
funny.
All go get gorilla suits, and when they come back, prank them.
Yeah, be like the ultimate Planet of the Apes prank.
I figured
good.
You would love that
it's
one.
Good.
Yeah, so really in that good. In that Chimp Crazy thing, by the way, I just think it's really funny. The part of the show that they used is us right when we're coming back from a break, and so they are playing "The Trees" by Rush, and it just seems so kind of out of place in this show, and I was like, I wonder why they used that. And then I realized it's the bumper music that we played.
Cool.
Like, they had to use the bumper music.
To me, the chimp lady will always be inextricably tied to Trish Gazelle, because Trish had just started on the show, and she was used to KZK, and then she walks into this mess, and I'm like, "Hey, we're going to a chimp compound where the feds are about to raid it." And she's like, "What? Why would we do that?" "What do you mean, why would you? You don't do that kind of stuff on KZK?"
"Why wouldn't you do it?"
Meanwhile, I'll be like, "Let's go."
Yeah, it got a little real there.
Yeah. What if you guys were at the compound when it got raided?
I mean, the fear.
There is a real chance.
Yeah.
I think we were no more than weeks from it, if not days.
Yeah, no, it was within like a week.
The question is, what do I do with my loyalties? I'm an FBI guy.
Yeah.
But I love the chimps.
Dave's standing out in front like, "Everyone stop fighting."
I love you both.
He's
I
want to fight. Flower in the-
Yeah, he's putting a flower. We can work out a peaceful solution to this.
Bobo, put the stick down.
Everyone just take off your hats or he will tear your face off.
Oh, man.
He hasn't had his Xanax today.
What a bizarre story that was.
Yeah. How did it end? Did she end up?
I don't know. That's why I have to finish watching Chimp Crazy.
Okay.
But in episode one, they come and they confiscate all of the chimps, and everyone's very sad.
Yeah, I think if they come and raid your compound looking for chimps and you have the chimps, they probably don't they probably don't just go like, "All right, no more chimps." Like, they probably punish you in some way.
She should have taught the chimps to hide.
Yeah. Like a speakeasy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, act like you're farmers. Act like you work here.
Have a trap door on the floor.
Got them in little.
Act like you're farmers.
Got them in little, like, newsboy caps and overalls in there. Planting seeds and stuff.
Excuse me, sir. You tell me where they keep the chimps?
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.